Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello and welcome to TalkSport's Women's Football Show podcast. I'll be here every week bringing you the best bits and exclusive content from the show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week we're on Monday at 10 p.m. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday and you can listen full there. This week I was joined by Crystal Palace manager Laura Kaminski, whose side are all but guaranteed to be moving up to the WSL next season. I asked her how she's feeling after her side's win at the weekend. Laura, thank you for making it in to the studio after yesterday's win. One more to go. How are you feeling?
Yeah, we're in a good place. Obviously, we're not getting too ahead of ourselves. We have to remember that the season's not closed yet. Obviously, you know, the table positioning and goal difference and the points puts us in a really good place. And, you know, we're nearly got it wrapped up. So, yeah, I think next week we've really got to concentrate on the week ahead. Fingers crossed, everything should go as we plan. And then it's a fantastic day at home at Selhurst Park for all the fans and for everyone involved with Crystal Palace and what a year we've had.
Yeah, and your journey, I want to talk more about your team in a minute, but your journey, I mean, you've been in charge in a short amount of time. I hold Palace special in my heart. I grew up on the same road as a training ground. Like, what is it that you've done in a short space of time? I know you've gotten a lot of young players on loan and just I've learned a lot about you. I've been asking players, they talk about your communication, how good is it? But you, what have you done in a short space of time? Because no one was talking about Crystal Palace at the beginning of the season for going up into the WSL.
No, and I think that's helped us because there's clubs that are coming to the end of a 3 or 2 year project where their ambitions are now set and everyone's eyes are on them in terms of going up to the WSL. No one mentioned Palace, no one even spoke about it. The club went through a rocky transition, as it always is, moving facilities and changing infrastructure and staffing. And it was my first job to recruit staff in the building as well as players. And when I first started at Palace, I remember my first day, I was at the back on an offcut of grass and I was running a rondo with about 7 players. So to say that we built it from scratch, and when I mean we, I mean both myself and Grace Williams, the newly appointed head of women's football at the time, who's been phenomenal, by the way, of back-to-back promotions now across Bristol and Palace. But, you know, for me, when I started, my philosophy is always based around people. And I think there's a lot of tacticians in the game now. There's a lot of talk around coaching and, you know, pressure to get better as a coach, to develop, to reflect, to progress. Listen, that's important. I'm taking nothing away from that at all. But for me, and you'll know Palace, Leanne, you'll know what it's like as a club and its development in the boys' academy and how it thrives on that. And that's something that, you know, longer term I'd like to do at the club. But when I first came in the door, for me, it was all about just getting good people in, staff and players. So that really was the foundation of my work and that's how it started. And I knew I had to move quickly, but there was no pressure to do what we've done. But yes, yeah, it's just happened.
It's amazing. I mean, I trained with Palace when I was playing in Soccer Aid, and we trained at Bromley Football Club twice a week, right? Yeah. And you could feel there was a good feeling amongst the group there. But, you know, how important is the investment from the men's side? Because obviously you train at the men's training ground now.
Yeah.
It's on the street that I grew up on. There's this massive, amazing training ground. How important is that to have the players in there every single day, that investment from the men's side?
Yeah, and I think, do you know what, ours looks a little bit different to other clubs because, you know, some Premier League clubs are in a great place and they build facilities specifically for women. Great, you know, that's, you know, direction of travel that the game is destined to be. But, you know, Palace, we're all integrated. And actually, that's been great this year because there's a real sort of buzz around a hive of workplace for the under-8s, for the under-14, you know, boys, into the women's first team. It's all collective in together. And I think that's created a great sort of balance and work ethos around the building. You know, it's all very integrated. The you know, I watch the boys train. We're all in an office together with the under-21 staff, with the academy, the boys' academy. And now the girls' academy is being developed. The PJ that sits under the women's first team is being newly put together. We just made an appointment of some staff there and that's being built as we speak. And I just think that integration has actually really helped with the club culture and environment because it's helped me absorb the club. Whereas if I'd have been segregated, it might not have worked so well. So maybe I've capitalised off of that and being sort of chucked in all and amongst each other. It's actually a great working environment and it helps me share learning, share thoughts. We're all invested in each other's performances and results. I think it helps like broaden the club philosophy and bleed it down across departments.
Yeah, and I think culture is a really, you know, important thing. And I think obviously you've got a lot of younger players in there. I think in the WSL, not many younger players get an opportunity. Mm. So, you know, you're bringing players in there, Araya Dennis, you know, Lexi Potter. What was it that, how were you able to get them from those clubs? You know, obviously Lexi signed a contract at Chelsea. Was that something like a big scouting at Palace? Was that something you had a big role in?
Yeah, that's the youngest player that Chelsea have put out on loan, contracted and put out on loan. And for me, that was an investment in the potential that player had. So it was obvious that, you know, they saw a shining star and that is what Lexi Potter is. She's been absolutely outstanding this season. And I think she'll progress on to do mega things. Like, I think she'll really make the top of the game. And the same, you know, same said about Araya. What a young talent she is. Obviously just been picked up by Tottenham and then put back on loan as well. And again, two completely different players in terms of skill sets. But, you know, top of the game is going to be for both of those players. I've built relationships as the years have gone on. I've obviously worked under managers for a long period of time at different clubs. And that's helped me build relationships with a lot of technical directors of clubs, a lot of coaches. I've got a lot of contacts, you know, in up and down the country. And I guess me being a people person and concentrating my philosophy on people in that fruition has risen because I've got contacts that I can speak to about players. And that is my scouting network. And those players were recommended to me. And obviously I went to watch them and at length and invested a lot of time in making sure there was the right decision for me. And it turns out it was bang on.
So yeah, and I want to talk about you because we're talking about other people, but I think you're quite humble in how you've approached this whole situation because Crystal Palace, you know, you've done so well, right? And obviously you were at Cheltenham before, you're at Tottenham, assistant coach. How does your role change when you're an assistant? Because from my experience of assistant managers, they've always been that one that puts their arm around you. Yeah. They've always been that one that says, oh, you know, you should be playing. I'd play you if I was the manager. So what is your like daily schedule like? What is it like for you? And what have you adjusted to being a head coach as opposed to an assistant?
Yeah, I think, you know, the staff have said to me, and that, you know, it's obviously comes out as the season goes on in, you know, small chit-chats you have with staff, that they actually enjoy the way that I'm not a full-on micromanager person. I'm, you know, I'm in the mix of everybody else. And that gives a good feel because, I like to value people and take on people's thoughts. I think the toughest thing for me now is being the ultimate decision maker. That's been an obvious, massive shift for me because before I'd always be able to flippantly give my view and say, do this, do that, when it wasn't me, you know, running and steering the ship, which I think I underestimated a little bit. And I found that hard initially and I've grown into it. And I have to back my own decisions because my experience, like you said, I've worked at a couple of clubs, you know, for a long period of time in the women's game. And, you know, I need to back the experience that I have. And that transition for me has been really important and a focus for me stepping into that role. And I think I'll always be developing that.
And obviously, you touched upon it before, being a people person and a communicator. I think that's something that's lacked in a women's game, certainly when I was playing, because as a player, you kind of just want to be told the honest truth, don't you? You want to play every minute of every match. But how important is communication for you and kind of being clear and open with your players? And then they might not like your decision, but it is what it is, as long as you're honest with them.
I think it's exactly that, Leanna. I will never lie. I stick to the truth and I stick to the facts. And I try and evidence and justify the decisions that I've made. I'm always honest, because otherwise I think as a manager you can get caught out if you get into, you know, those talks with players where you're starting to sway off track a little bit and start to talk about things that are not perhaps on the agenda of the discussion. And I try and be quite clear and concise with those. There's always going to be unhappy faces in the group that aren't playing. And I've got to accept that that is a good thing, because players want to play. And trying to manage that is hard, but it's also managing expectations. And I think that what shines through with certainly, you know, my assistant, Adam, and myself, we're player developers. We love to see players try and reach their potential, get better. And I think that investment and commitment from me and the staff hopefully shines through with them, because, listen, we know you're not playing. We're trying to get you into a place where, you know, you're flying. And for me, that's the focus of my work in the week. You spoke about my schedule. I plan everything heavily. It's all bespoke. I never deliver the same thing twice. I always chop and change things in the week just to keep people on their toes. And for me, trying to get players in a place where they're confident, and where they've got clear objectives to try and improve throughout the season, to try and keep them on board and reaching targets, it's been important.
I think obviously you've got one more game to go, but it'll take pretty much a miracle if you don't go up. You know, you've got a 22 goal difference ratio. At what point in the season did you start to think this could be a reality here? Because obviously every championship manager will be talking to their players in pre-season. You know, this is our goals. These are our expectations. But at what point of the season did you think, actually, because that championship is flip-flopping. You know, I had Hilsey on the other week. They were top of the league. Then you've got Sunderland, you know, Southampton in fourth, and they're flip-flopping. What point of the season did you think, actually, this is actually a realistic expectation?
I'm going to be honest and say never. I think everyone was saying it more than I was. I was always really concentrating on... I'll tell you one thing. I've not once looked at the table all year, because the table was irrelevant until you get to the sharp end of things. So there was no point in me looking at the table. It would just get me into a twist of, oh, if they do that and if we do this. And I focused on us all year. On our camp, our players, rather than our position, which I think has taken a lot of pressure off the group. And I've said to the group over and over again, the only pressure week after week is to perform, not points. There's a difference. And you know, handling that as the first time as a manager, it's always a bit risky. I sought some advice, some great mentors in my life, in and around football, and discussed it at length of my options of what to do. But I decided to go with performances are more important than points, because the group love to play good football. And anyone who's watched Crystal Palace this year will probably say that footballing wise, they've been outstanding. So I really, really think that's come through in our identity, and eventually points mean prizes.
Well, I mean, I'm absolutely buzzing for you, Laura, honestly. I think it's fantastic. You've done an amazing job in a short space of time. There is less than a month left to go until the WSL title is decided. Let's catch up on the most recent results with TalkSport's Uma Gurav.
It's flip-flop at the top of the WSL. Chelsea had retaken the number one spot thanks to a 3-0 win over Aston Villa earlier in the week. Villa goalkeeper Anna Leet was sent off after just 4 minutes because she handled the ball outside the box. But Chelsea's reign at the top hasn't lasted long. Man City stormed back to number one thanks to a resounding 5-0 win over West Ham. Their first goal came just 24 seconds in. It's a hugely important result given that this title race could still come down to goal difference. Meanwhile, the three Champions League spots have now been locked in after Arsenal came away from their last Emirates game this season with a 3-0 win over Leicester. It will be too much for Man United or Liverpool to catch them now, especially after Man United could only salvage a 2-2 draw against Tottenham. Means the meeting between those two in the FA Cup final is set to be a close one. Liverpool's 1-0 victory over Bristol City means the Robins are now almost guaranteed to be relegated this season, despite their admirable spirit. Elsewhere, Everton edged a close affair against Brighton. A late own goal saw them walk away with a 2-1 win. So we're nearing the end of the season, but it is still all to play for. Come the final whistle, will City be sitting pretty? Will Emma be making hay? Or could the Gunners still turn around and stun us?
Now, Laura, Man City back on top of the table, you know, absolutely annihilated West Ham yesterday. What have you made of them this season? Gareth Taylor's done a really good job. I think finally their plan is coming into fruition with all the players they've had over the years. What do you make of them so far this season?
Yeah, I think if you look at the, you know, the goals that they scored against West Ham, the majority of those goals come from crossing and finishing and a variety of goal scorers. And for me, when you're scoring from left and right hand sides of the pitch, inside, outside the box, you know, a variety of different ways to finish, it really puts the team in a good position. And, you know, they've got Bunny Shaw, Lauren Hemp, just two of the players, you know, to mention as key. I know Jess Park stepped up at the weekend. But the variety of finishes for me really does set its stall out in terms of a team that are really trying to achieve. I know they've got three games left, and the Arsenal game, by the way, in the middle of those games becomes key now, I think, for them. Three games to go, but when you're scoring that many goals, your confidence is high, and you know they'll be going into the next game full of beans.
Talking of goals, Bunny Shaw picked up that injury in that game, went off on, you know, she was in an ankle brace. So hopefully, you know, Gareth Taylor said it wasn't that serious, but hopefully she's going to be okay. So our well wishes with her. So we'll talk about a team that, you know, used to be close to your heart, Tottenham. Man United yesterday, you know, what have you made of Tottenham? You must be so delighted at how well they've done. You were there kind of at the start before they were even in the WSL, and obviously that's going to be a recreation of the FA Cup final. So what did you make of that game?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Letizia scored very late on in the game. She just signed a deal, so she must be in very good spirits, and I think the FA Cup final will look very different to the league game. But, you know, speaking of Spurs and the growth that club has seen has been phenomenal, and I'm pleased to see Jess Nas flying as well. I know she's
been there from the beginning, as you know, and Ash Neville as well.
Yeah, Ash Neville as well, yeah. Celebrated the goal with her. It was nice to see. And obviously they've brought in a new manager that's brought some players with him that are going to be key moving forwards. But for me, Spurs they've absolutely come on leaps and bounds. I think they've really progressed as a club in terms of their infrastructure in the building, and now the players that they're bringing in under his leadership, I think, is really steering them to a new place. And now they're, you know, for a club like that to be in an FA Cup final is an outstanding achievement. And hats off to all the staff and players that have worked tirelessly. Again, I know Kit Graham's back. She spent a long time out, obviously, with an ACL, and it's good to see her featuring again. But, you know, Spurs are starting to compete. I know there's a big gap between the top three and then the fourth in terms of points, but they're really starting to push into that upper tier now in and around Man United, whereas that wasn't always the case. And I think as years go on, Spurs will really look to push for that top three, and, you know, look forward to seeing more competitive games. And it's nice to see a final with two teams people didn't put their money on. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, and Bristol are basically relegated. You know, they're still in it because West Ham lost that game. It's been difficult for them this season because obviously they've gone up. They haven't really been able to kind of hang with the big guns to a certain degree, and they've tried. What have you made of Bristol? And in the back of your mind, is it giving you kind of food for thought of what you, pending that you do go up, I know there's one more game to go, food for thought of what you will be looking to do within the champion, the WSL?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that'll be my focus. Moving in now, that'd be good food for thought to think about in terms of specifically recruitment and setting up, you know, what sort of style. And I think, you know, a key question for every head coach is what comes first? Do you recruit around your philosophy, or do you get the players in and then build a team? I won't say what Palace are planning on doing.
Nah, but I'll say that for when you come on again.
I will, yeah. But, you know, I think recruitment is key. And I think, you know, if you get that right in the early stages, you set, you know, a clear identity out, you've got half a chance. And I feel for Bristol because Lauren, the head coach there, is, you know, tactically outstanding, very good on the grass, great people person, great player manager. But, you know, this year they haven't got things out of games that they should have got.
How do you think you keep players' motivation high during those moments? Because no doubt the players are trying, but what do you do as a head coach when it's almost like, you know, you're going up against these teams that, and that's why I enjoy watching the Championship, because it's competitive. Yeah. I think we have a tendency to kind of, we've got a top four, within the WSL, and then the rest is hard to hang, isn't it?
Yeah, I think when you get on a run of, you know, three or four losses on the bounce, heads really start to sink a little bit, and trying to keep that confidence and motivation in the group is key. But, you know, if you look at it from my perspective, we haven't been in that position as such this season. But what we have done is we've made mistakes where we've tried to be the quickest fixer. So fix it quick for the next week, which the group have really bought into and carried on. So that's only been sort of a 1 or 2 week blip for us. And if that goes on for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, trying to fix that becomes more of a mega task for players to get their head around. But I think keeping it simple and enjoying football and, you know, enjoying training, having passion for defending, for scoring, for recovering, for counter-attacking, you know, all the elements of the game that are exciting to be involved in. I think keeping that passion and intensity and tempo in training is fundamental. And that's certainly something that I'll be hanging my hat on for the next year.
Yeah, and obviously we're fingers crossed that you go up. And if Leicester men's team go up, we'll see, you know, every single team in a WSL will have, you know, the male counterparts in the league as well. How important do you think that is to have that kind of backing, you know, have the big name clubs for attendances and that type of stuff? I'm sure for you, you've already started to plan for next season, even before this one started.
Yeah, I think it builds momentum. I mean, if you look at, you know, for example, if you, the clubs that don't have that male presence in terms of Premier League presence, sometimes if you look at the fan numbers, you know, they're a little bit lower, whereas, you know, we're breaking records every week, and, you know, that's probably capitalising of the men being in the Premier League. I'm not saying it's impossible. There's been years where women's clubs have kind of stood alone and gone ahead of the men in terms of steering things forward. But I really feel that as the future of the game moves on, having that branding and badge around the women's team, wrapped around it, it's only going to get bigger and brighter.
And obviously on the Championship, we have Nuco coming in to kind of try and kind of bridge those gaps between the lower leagues and the WSL. What do you make of, like, Nuco coming in, and what do you think they'll do to hopefully, you know, bring the gap from the Championship and WSL a little bit closer?
Yeah, I think there's still work to be done, you know, in terms of sort of the staffing and provisions for the players. I think there's a way to go there. Sometimes that isn't clearly shown to the external eyes. I think there's a lot of things maybe people don't know in terms of the lower ends that are still going on. But I do think what's important is women are now really empowered to speak up about those standards and about those differences. And things maybe do look different for a while because it isn't the same. And that's okay. But what is important, you know, seen a couple of things in the press recently in terms of, you know, medical provisions or transportation, you know, things like that that are quite difficult in the women's game and have been for some time. People are really brave in coming forward now and trying to make shifts and changes and developments and progression in those areas. And I think people should be really brave in continuing to do so.
Yeah, I think as well, like, that's why I love doing this show, because I have Ash Hinks on from AFC Wimbledon, who also, special shout out, just got promoted as well. And I think it's important because people can look at Arsenal, for example, and I love that club, 60,000 at the Emirates, but then you look at like an Everton, you know, they've got 900 people at their games. So there is an imbalance somewhere. And obviously we had Well HQ on our show the other week as well, that spoke about, you know, the support to do with like menstrual cycles and that type of stuff. And I just think you're right, Laura. I think the game has come on leaps and bounds, certainly from when I retired. Maybe I'll come out of retirement and play for you if you let me. Yes, without the running.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chelsea travelled to Spain to face Barcelona in the first leg of the Champions League semi-final. Let's hear how it sounded on TalkSport with your commentary team of Charlotte Richardson and Jenna Scalacci.
Beautiful, bright blue skies engulf the Estadio Olympic as some of Europe's brightest superstars line up in a clash we have become very familiar with in the Women's Champions League. Ramirez's movement is certainly causing problems as Erin Cuthbert finds herself with the opportunity to shoot. And Cuthbert scores and breaks the deadlock. Chelsea take the lead. And the Estadi Olympic stands in silence apart from a corner in blue. Barcelona have the ball on the edge of the area. The cross comes in, headed away. Another shot blocked again. Appeals for a handball. And it's a penalty to Barcelona. There is going to be a VAR check. There's an offside. An offside in the build-up. Barcelona have the ball. The crowd is behind them. The cross comes in. It's a really good run. And we've waited 85 minutes for Barcelona to have a really good clear-cut chance in this match. Delivery comes in, headed back towards goal to Buteyes, who misses the target from less than 6 yards out. All-time whistle was blown, 99 minutes of football later, and Chelsea reign on the Spanish parade.
Now, Laura, this one, I mean, first time Barcelona have lost at home in 5 years. What an unbelievable record that is. What did you make of the game? Chelsea won the first leg 1-0. I know after the game, Emma Hayes was mindful of saying, you know, the job is not done yet. But what did you make of the game and what do you make of that incredible win over in Barcelona for Chelsea?
I think people are saying it's probably one of the best victories for the club of all time. I think, you know, if you look at the amount of trophies that Chelsea have got in terms of, you know, year in, year out, producing across domestic game. But, you know, it's phenomenal for the club. And like you say, the job's not done, but what a great position they find themselves in now.
And obviously someone like Emma Hayes, is she somebody that you look at? You know, what type of coaches do you look up to? Is Emma one of those?
Yeah, definitely. Who doesn't? I think she's put herself in a position now where she is regarded and respected as probably one of the best coaches in the country, regardless of gender, team, you know, her management, her style, some of the responses that she gives in press conferences with such confidence, and yeah, I mean she's got more experience than a lot of people, and you know, hats off to her. Obviously she's off to a new role across the water, and yeah, I mean for me she's someone that I'd look up to.
Yeah, and obviously, Chelsea, even though Chelsea won, Barcelona kept knocking. We saw post-game, you know, Bonmati looked really frustrated because they're not used to losing. What do you think Chelsea need to do in this second leg at Stamford Bridge? Because obviously, I think my opinion is, against a team like Barcelona, you almost have to beat them 3-0 or 4-0 in order to kind of beat them. But what do you think Chelsea need to do in the second leg, apart from the obvious and win the game? But what is it you kind of see? Because obviously, in the back of their mind, they're thinking they've got Alexia Putellas on the bench. They bring her on. They've got Bonmati, the best player in the world. They've got Caldante. You know, the list could go on. Paraluelo. And they still created chances. But what do you think, you know, will be running through the players' minds and Emma's minds this week?
Well, it's difficult to say. But I really feel that, you know, defending first is important. I feel like they've got to make sure that their defensive shape and structure has got good balance because they know that they've got something to hold on to. So that I'm sure that's high on the list, and trying to capitalise on the good start that they've already had. And in terms of, you know, another part of the game, I think substitutions, you touched on it there in terms of some of the names that they've got rolling in from the bench starting or coming onto the game to influence it. Substitutions is a fantastic skill set. And I think the timing of those, and you know, obviously you can only predict a starting lineup, but you know, if you do your research, you can pretty much get in and around it.
Well, I want to draw on something you just said, because it wasn't until I spoke to Casey Stoney, who was obviously a former teammate of mine last year, and she spoke to me about when you're a coach, you start to think about the players that they could start, but you think, yeah, Actually they could come off the bench. And I used to always think my validation was starting a game.
You know, yeah. I thought, oh my God, I'm not good enough. But actually, if a coach communicates that, you know, that you're going to come into this game and make an impact. But how much is that in the back of like your mind and Emma Hayes' mind? Because I think it's really interesting to think about now I've retired, because I always used to claim my validation through if I started and I just thought the coach didn't like me. But that might not always be the case.
Maybe you were too good to start, Leanne. You came on as the firecracker at the end. But I don't know. I really think that some players, you know, are really effective towards later periods of the game. Maybe they'll change shape. You know that in the last period of the game, from 60 to 90, they're going to change. And you know that player against that shape is really, really effective. I've got players in my squad that are really effective for maybe shorter bursts because they can keep higher intensity. And as that, because they're young, you know, they're inexperienced. And as they grow, that will obviously progress and increase in terms of its power for longer. But no, I think it's a skill set in itself as a coach, making the right sub at the right time, when to stop the game to make those substitutions, when to change shape, whether to hold. And also you've got to think about what you've spoken about a little bit is the mentality of the players and keeping everyone in a good place mentally. You know, if you don't use the bench and everyone's sitting there and you know, they only start in 11, you're just relying on them. Sometimes there's that segregation between the bench and the pitch. Which you never want to see. You want to get people on and you want to see people play. But getting them in a position where they can do that consistently and get them to buy into that mindset, like you've already said, you know, spoken about your mindset being, you know, for you, if you didn't start, you didn't feel like you was first pickings. And maybe that, you know, communicating well to players, you know, the intensity of the game is increasing and, you know, changing things throughout the game is important. Those people are just as important. Are the ones that start. Sometimes my starters just grind the game down till it opens up a little bit, and then I bring on sort of intense and pace and power from the bench when I know that the starting 11 have ground things down. So yeah, I think, you know, it's a project in itself to look at.
And Emma Hayes went with a back five in this game, talking of shape. You know, what did you make of that? Because obviously we saw Lauren James, Maya Ramirez actually start up top. Last year, Lauren James was actually on the bench, and I questioned, Emma's a good friend of mine, but I questioned that decision because I think, you know, I'm the type of coach that would play probably 11 strikers. That's why I'm not coaching. But what did you make of, you know, the back five as opposed to a three? We know how good Chelsea are defensively as well as attack.
Yeah, I think, you know what, it's difficult to change shape. And I mean, I know it well because I did it against Emma in the FA Cup. Obviously, I didn't come off the winner. But changing shape within a short period of time, let's not forget her schedule as well. She's got a lot of games, you know, straight back to the league, and they've got to move back to a new shape, or do they stick with what they did against Barcelona and then bringing that back again for the second leg? It's hard work to do that, and getting that right so that players really understand their role and responsibility is very hard. And it's good to see that's paid off for her. But yeah, I she's obviously done her homework on Barcelona and felt that shape with the players and the skill sets that she's got can capitalise on that and also mismatch some of their skill sets. You know, maybe she felt that those decisions that she made up top could really get at what they've got in defence and sort of mismatching against units. But, you know, in this case, when you come away 1-0, it's a masterclass.
Yeah, and there's 30,000 tickets already sold at Stamford Bridge at the weekend. You know, how do you see this one playing out? I mean, I'm going to be there. I'm so excited. I'm going to be down there pitch side. And I'm just buzzing for this game because obviously I was part of the team, the only team that's ever won it. And I love that. The fact that we're the only other English team to do it. But I want, you know, Emma Hayes deserves this, you know, in her last kind of season in England, going over to USA. How do you see this one going?
So what a send-off that would be. And for her to achieve that, I think she's, you know, she's put in the years of graft and deserves that. But the game itself, I think, will be phenomenal. You know, to already sell 30,000 tickets and for that to be climbing day after day, I think, we'll get many more numbers than that. And it'll be a great stage and a great occasion for fans to go and watch a top-class game of football.
And obviously, I just want to talk to you about the pathways and the journeys. Obviously, you've coached a younger national team level as well in the FA and been part of those pathways. What have you seen that's kind of been a change in recent years?
I think,
like volunteering, that type of stuff, you know, there's been a lot of that throughout the years. But what do you make of kind of the good job the FA has done in kind of putting together those pathways?
Yeah, really investing in staff has been one key thing for me, specific to the women's game. In that sense, is that getting staff in the building with support, you know, in and around that to get staff in full-time positions. And you know, that never used to be the case. I used to do a full day's teaching and then go over to Tottenham and coach in the evening and then get up again at 6 o'clock in the morning to go and teach. That's what I wanted to do. I'm not saying, you know, but those days are gradually leaving us. But one thing I would question around that is the readiness of the staff to go into those roles. So although I was doing that on a part-time basis, those were the years that I needed to do on Hackney Marshes, at the kids' clubs, at the summer schools, all of those things that really earn your stripes and help you as a coach get the foundations in before you start to coach better players. And you're ready to coach those players, by the way. And, you know, sometimes with these full-time roles coming out now, my question is, have people got the experience as well as the qualifications to fill those roles and really add value to a female team in those stances? Listen, we hope so, fingers crossed. But, you know, that I feel like that's a piece that needs development and to look at and ensure that those people that are lucky enough to have, you know, to earn those full-time roles have got the expertise to give to the players.
I also caught up with Women Kick Ball's founder, Jackie Gutierrez, to find out all the action in the NWSL, how it's going, and those transfers.
Okay, I'm delighted to say that joining me live from Los Angeles at 8 o'clock in the morning, Jackie Gutierrez from Women Kick Ball. Jackie, thanks for joining me. How are you doing? Yeah. And what a crazy, I had to get you on because for those of you that don't know, the NWSL transfer deadline window closed at midnight on Saturday. We had these crazy stories coming out beginning of the week of Maria Sanchez. Can you just give everybody the backstory on Maria Sanchez and what has gone on over the weekend?
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely the epitome of the NWSL madness. And we're like in we just wrapped up week 5. So, I mean, we have 20 something more weeks to go. But with Maria Sanchez coming to the San Diego Wave, I mean, that's huge. Just seeing her record breaking deal back in December, it was 1.5 million with the dash. And then 3 months into that, requesting a trade. And so there's just so much going on behind the scenes. But I think even with that aspect of such a top talented player like Maria Sanchez and her going to the Wave, I mean, it's just gonna be wild to see what can happen. The Wave played Bay FC this weekend, so who knows if she'll be available. There hasn't been an update on that yet. But when you just think about her caliber with players like Alex Morgan, Jaden Shaw, and Kaya Caruso, Elise Bennett, I mean, it's just insane. So I think it'll be interesting to see what the Wave will do, but I know they've kind of been lower on the end of these hill standings. So I think she'll definitely make an impact there. Just seeing her talent and being in that right environment for her will be really cool to see. So I think this NWSL just competition is just going to keep growing. And it's already been pretty wild to see all these gold scores by internationals as well. So yeah, we're definitely in it for a long season for sure.
Yeah. I covered the game, you know, on Friday night with Amazon Orlando Pride versus the San Diego Wave. And just before we went on air, we got this news and you kind of referenced it there. But I think as a player, I don't think I've ever seen a situation like this. Players will want to leave a club, right? But to have signed that contract, you said over $1 million back in December, to then 3 months later want to trade. I don't remember ever really seeing that. And it was quite a public thing. And I said, you know, it was really good that it got over the line, because if it didn't, then I have no idea what would have happened, because having a player at a team that's not happy and those types of things, it was always going to be difficult. You know, like if you have a player there with discontent, you know, amongst the team. So I just think I think it's wild.
Yeah. And then too, getting all the other drops like Paige Nielsen and just all these different things. The Thorns had some different moves in there as well. I think for Paige Nielsen, that was a huge, just tough loss for a lot of Angel City fans. I mean, seeing her impact and yeah, just the type of player that she is. And so, I mean, really for them, it comes down to allocation money and the whole aspect of it hasn't been said because Angel City didn't get any players. But, you know, thinking about where does Kristen Press fit into their roster and the rest of the season? Is she going to be back full time? And so I think there's different moving parts to this bigger puzzle and bigger picture that we don't see right away. So it's definitely interesting. And like you're saying, just crazy. Like some of these things are unheard of and they're just happening so fast. But I think that's the kind of exciting part about the league too, is that you just never know what to expect. Like you think you have an idea and then just boom, one thing clicks and it changes the rest of the league and just the rest of how the season can play out. So it's definitely going to be pretty wild to see just, yeah, these next 20 something weeks.
Yeah, and other transfers, you just mentioned Paige Nielsen to the Houston Dash, Armandine Henri to Utah Royals, and Katrine Berger to Gotham. Like, the Armandine Henri one, I think, came way out of left field for a lot of people. Similar to Paige Nielsen, I know the Angel City fans were not happy with those, you could kind of see on social media. What did you make of the Armandine Henri one?
Yeah, I think for that one, it was interesting just thinking about I mean, that player, like, so talented just with France, and just seeing her, I mean, she's ruthless on the ball. I was looking at some of her highlights, and it's just pretty wild what she can do. So I think seeing her go from, you know, being in the league and then coming back with Angel City, being signed during a World Cup window, and then now going to the Royals, I mean, it'll just be pretty crazy to see, because the Royals are right now on the lower end of the table. So,
you know what, Jackie, though? I also think, yeah, I like Amandine Henry. I've played against her a number of times. I think the NWSL, the pace of the league, I think she sometimes gets lost within games. You know, I like her as a person. Yeah. She's quite difficult to play against. But I think, you know, the Paige Nielsen one for me will be a bigger loss than Amandine Henry. So I want to talk to you as well about Portland Thorns. Obviously, Rob Gale took over middle of the week. Mike Norris got, you know, promoted but demoted, became technical director. Rob Gale, the assistant, took over. What did you make of all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I could tell just with the Thorns and their performance. I mean, I was at the opening game in Kansas City as well. So seeing that, you're just like, this is not the Portland team that we know. Just the caliber was not the same. And then just seeing that that pattern continue on in the next few weeks, it was like, okay, something's going to happen with Portland, because this is just not working for them right now. And so it wasn't that much of a shock. Just, I think, more so interesting how they restructured that whole dynamic internally. So that was pretty interesting. But yeah, I think this weekend you saw a huge change. I mean, Sophia Smith, you know, was just like so incredible for them, making assists. And so I think when you have players like that are thriving just on their rhythm, and they're meshing better together in that way, it's going to make a difference. So seeing that, the fact that they got their first win in this new structure, you're like, okay, obviously, you know, that was a good decision. But I think, again, continuing that throughout the season or having some sort of consistency is going to be key, just because you see some of these coaching changes or structure changes that teams face, and it can, yeah, sometimes be detrimental, you know, just to the longevity of their season. So I think right now they're a good place and, you know, turning things around. But yeah, hopefully they can continue scoring more high scoring games like that, because yeah, it was just wild to see their potential and the way they just clicked, and they felt like a whole just different team in that sense too.
There's no doubt they've got good enough players. It just didn't seem to be clicking on the field of play. And I think it was a necessary thing Karina LeBlanc, the GM, had to make. Now, I was there on Friday night, I mentioned, with Amazon, Orlando Pride, and against San Diego Wave. And I was there to see Barbara Banda make her debut, come off the bench. I mean, the crowd, there was Zambian, like everybody was there with flags. It was just great to see. And obviously the attendances at the Pride need to be better. They're getting better, but they were nowhere near when I played there, you know, the attendances. But it sounded like it was a full stadium when Barbara Banda came on. She could have scored within her first touches. What did you make of her first game?
Yeah, it was super exciting to see just her performance, and obviously the whole thing behind her deal, and just like the transfer fee and that breaking records as well. So I think it was definitely a really cool moment for Orlando, and just seeing the fans be so hyped up about that. And I mean, obviously she hasn't been with the team in training that long either. So I think on Friday night's game, it was just like a small taste of what, you know, the Pride can see this season. So I think that was pretty cool, just the opportunity she had on goal initially. So I mean, they won 1-0, but that easily could have been a 3-0 game or something. So, you know, just seeing their potential, like, they're definitely going to be dangerous. I think they're a team that, you know, people should not be sleeping on, because they have so many good internationals as well with other Brazilians and things like that. So I just think right now they have all the pieces, and it'll just be really cool to see how that comes together throughout the season and how they continue to build. Cause yeah, they definitely have some key players for them. So they can probably, I don't know, be probably one of the best Orlando Pride teams that we see this season for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And we've seen a lot of teams, you know, Kansas City, Current, Orlando, unbeaten, you know, within this league. I think you look at teams that are struggling. Are there any teams that you're surprised at? Because you look at the Seattle Reign, Utah Royals is kind of expected because they're an expansion team. But I think the teams that I've been quite underwhelmed with have been the Seattle Reign and the San Diego Wave. What's your thoughts on the teams that haven't really achieved yet? I mean, we're only four games in, you know, four games and five games for some teams. The Wave obviously had that first Challenge Cup game against Gotham, so they're one game behind. Well, it's still early in the season, but what do you make of my thoughts on those ones?
Yeah, I think Seattle Reign as well, I would agree. It's just different. I mean, they're right now 14 teams, so not the greatest start. But I mean, this league is just so wild that you have teams who are at the bottom of the table in the opening weeks, and then, you know, they're the next NWSL Shield winners or whatever. So
Louisville are unbeaten as well. I forgot to mention Louisville.
Yeah, they've had a great game this weekend and just all the records that were broken. So I think, you know, it's kind of tough in these opening weeks, especially players probably with some of these international windows as well, and just they haven't maybe found that rhythm. So yeah, I would agree in thinking that Seattle Reign and San Diego Wave haven't, you know, performed at their best level, but maybe it's just taking longer for them to click or to get into that rhythm. So it'll just be interesting to see. But I mean, those are two quality teams, so it is kind of, I think, just your initial thought is like, oh, that's not the normal for them. So seeing just how things will play out for them will be interesting. But yeah, really cool to see teams like Louisville just go out really strong, and the Current as well. They haven't lost at home at all yet. So and then Chicago as well, they've had a great run so far. And just the fact that Chicago has only score or conceded one goal against them and had one loss, I mean, that's a really good start for a new head coach as well. So they're doing big things as well.
Yeah, Lorne Donaldson's done a really good job, obviously, coming over from the Reggae Girls. I want to talk to you a little bit about as well, and Katrine Berger. Obviously, my audience is in England mostly, majority, and in Europe and in America as well. But and Katrine Berger going to Gotham from Chelsea, what did you make of that one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, with the whole goalkeeper jerseys now being for sale, and you see a player, one of the things I noticed was like Michelle Beto's jersey wasn't up there. So it's like, what's happening there? You know, just trying to pick up the pieces on some of their goalkeepers and things like that. But just looking at that, I mean, Gotham, they're a little bit lower in the ranks for sure, but their margins aren't too bad. I mean, they've only conceded 4 goals, but they have only won their opening game this season. So I think for them trying to build up that consistency, and I mean, anytime you can add quality goalkeepers to your roster, I mean, that's never a bad move usually. So I think with that, it's just like another layer to them of maybe just picking up that pace and continuing to go forward. So I think it'll just be interesting to see how that plays out. But yeah, I think that's definitely a great move, and just only makes them stronger too. So hopefully that's something where they can come back and be more of that Gotham championship team that we've seen, versus facing some of these injuries or different things like that and having those kind of struggles on the field. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a pretty crazy season, but I think across the board everyone's like pretty stacked, so it'll be cool just to see that competition keep growing.
Amazing. Jackie, there's a reason why you are my NWSL you know, expert, and the only go-to that I will have to come on my show for this type of stuff. So thank you for joining
me.
Get some sleep in Los Angeles, and I'll see you very
appreciate
soon.
Appreciate it. Sounds good.
That's all for this week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Monday when we'll know if Chelsea have made it through to that all-important Champions League final.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.